This is The Book in the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
If you had a time machine and could go back to biblical times, you would discover that people then had a very different perspective, a different worldview than we have now. That goes without saying, right? But what was that worldview? Now, thanks to archaeological discoveries of the past century and a half, we have more and more written documents that give us that information. Two scholars in particular in recent years have dedicated themselves to making sure that it's not just biblical scholars who have access to this biblical background information. Michael Heiser with his book The Unseen Realm and John Walton with his Lost World series of books have laid out for us non-scholars how we can better understand the Bible when we understand the worldview of the cultures that existed when the Bible was written. And not just in ancient Israel, but also, as John Walton tells us, the countries that surrounded Israel in Egypt and Mesopotamia.
There's a lot of movement back and forth, whether it was merchants or whatever it might be. There was cultural exchange that took place, and there is cultural discourse that took place. The scribal schools in one area may well have become familiar and use some of the literature from another region. And we even find this, of course, in archaeology with the architecture. My son is an archaeologist, and they're currently digging at Tel Shimron. Last summer, they dug up a corbelled arch from the Middle Bronze period. There are no other corbelled arches in Israel and the southern Levant, but there are in Mesopotamia. And so here we have an architectural form that is known from one region that is then used in another. And the same is true of some of the pottery. Again, my son dug at Ashkelon for many years. And at Ashkelon, you had the Sea Peoples. And so you have some pottery that's imported from the Aegean region. And then you have the production of copies of that that are made with native clay. So you have this clear interaction that's taking place between cultures, even as far away as the Aegean, as well as, of course, with Egypt and Mesopotamia.
You mentioned the Tower of Babel. That was your PhD work that you did. One of the things that I picked up from Michael Heiser was the fact that people in the ancient world, when they thought about how sin came into the world, thought about it differently than people today. Today, we think of the fall of Adam, which was important. The ancient Hebrews also would have considered the Tower of Babel, and also, I think, Genesis 6, when the sons of God had children with the daughters of men. These were all part of the worldview of the people of that time.
They were, and we have to try to understand those again in their context. So, for instance, when I did my work on the Tower of Babel, one of the first insights, realizations I came to was that when they built those famous ziggurats in the ancient world, they were not built for people to go up. They were built for gods to come down. That significantly alters our interpretation of Genesis 11, and it helps us understand a little bit about the setting as well. It wasn't an act of pride trying to get up to heaven. They wanted God to come down, and they wanted God to come down to enter his temple, which was right next to the ziggurat, and they wanted to worship him. For them, worship meant meeting his needs, and they believed that if they could lure God down and then enter this relationship where they met his needs, then he would bring prosperity to them. And in that way, they would make a name for themselves. Now, once you have that information in place, you've got another option on the table. Making a name is not an act of pride, but an act of greed. That is, they wanted the prosperity that having a god in their pocket could bring. This is an example of how when we learn about the ancient world, it can give us a different perspective on some of the biblical passages.
Another thing that I picked up from The Unseen Realm, in fact, it's the subtext of the title, Recovering the Supernatural Worldview of the Bible. The ancients had a much different understanding of the supernatural than Christians do today.
That's true. They thought about gods differently. They thought about what the gods approved or liked differently. So they did think about things in a different way. Again, at one level, God was giving Israel revelation that would change their views. But at another level, there are basic similarities that did not necessarily change. And so we have to sort that out.
Modern Christians feel like there's just one God. There's God, Jesus, there's a Trinity. But in the Old Testament, we have the word Elohim, which could mean God, or it also is translated gods. It covers the whole spiritual realm.
It's a collective realm of deity. You're right. And Elohim can also be used to refer to things that they wouldn't necessarily call gods, but that are in the spiritual realm. So the spirit of Samuel that Saul encounters in 1 Samuel 28, that spirit is called Elohim. So to that extent, again, ideas are packaged differently in words, and we can't just assume a one-to-one correspondence.
For those who've just joined us, we're talking with John Walton, Professor Emeritus at Wheaton College, and the author of seven books in the Lost World series. We talked to him in 2011 and did an interview on the first book, The Lost World of Genesis 1. And there's also The Lost World of Scripture, The Lost World of Adam and Eve, The Lost World of the Israelite Conquest, The Lost World of the Flood, The Lost World of the Torah, and The Lost World of the Prophets, which is the latest in the series. This came out just earlier in 2024. What is the perspective of The Lost World of the Prophets?
Well, it basically is trying to help us understand where the concept of prophecy was situated in the ancient world. Again, packaging ideas differently. In the ancient world, prophecy was a subcategory of divination. That strikes us really strange because when we read the Bible, we see that prophecy is highly valued and divination is rejected and forbidden. But divination is just the ways that people heard from the gods. There were ways that they did that in Mesopotamia that God told Israel, no, that doesn't work. That's not how I communicate. And whether that's divination from the stars and the movement of sun and moon, or whether it's divination based on the examination of the entrails of sacrificed animals, those are all part of divination in the ancient world, but they believed that was how God spoke to them. But of course, another way that God spoke, instead of through the mediation of the stars, was through the mediation of people. And that's where prophets come in. They are people speaking a message from God, and the ancient world had its prophets in all of its cultures. There were prophets of Baal and prophets of Asherah, 1 Kings 18. This is a broader phenomena. It's part of this divination subset. What that does for us, the more we can understand how divination works, it might give us some deeper understanding of how they thought that prophecy worked.
How have people received these books, seven books that you've written? Is there any one in the series in particular that has been more well received?
These are controversial topics. And whenever you write on a controversial topic, there's going to be people on either side of you who don't like what you're doing. No matter where you locate yourself, that's a given. It doesn't take long on the internet to find some pushback about these ideas. At the same time, these ideas have been very widely and favorably received in many quarters. I get emails every day. I travel across the country being invited to speak on these things. There are many people who feel like they're greatly helped. I expect to get responses of both sorts. The books have sold very well. Certainly, still, Lost World of Genesis 1 has sold more than any other. It's been translated into a number of languages. It sells electronic copies as well as hard copies, and it's sold over 100,000 copies in all of those different venues. Still, I get emails, oh, I just discovered your Lost World series, and this is 15 years later. Now, at the same time, my ideas are growing and developing all the time. So I have a book that's now at the publisher and is due out in February, called New Explorations in the Lost World of Genesis, where I'm updating the conversation as a result of my 15 years of lecturing and thinking and reading, new insights, new ideas of how to present the material, and a couple places where I've changed my mind a bit. That's going to be another book in the Lost World series coming out in February.
I think some of the most recent pushback that I've read came from the realm of the young Earth creationists.
Sure, they don't like what I do because I don't believe that Genesis 1 is packaging the ideas of creation in a physical material focus. I think rather they package their ideas of creation by thinking about order and God bringing order. One of the examples I use is that there's a difference between building a house and making a home. They're both acts of creation, but they're different acts of creation. When we talk about creation, we focus on the material world, and we tend to think in terms of what I call a house story, building the house. But in the ancient world, I've suggested that they're not really interested in the house story. They know that there's a material world around them, but they're interested in the home story. To them, that's the most important act of creation. I try to suggest that that's the story that Genesis 1 is telling. If that's true, that means that the 7 days has nothing to do with the age of the earth, because age of the earth is a material question. And if this is not a house story, but a home story.
One of the phrases that you use and that we talked about in the first part of our interview 11 years ago, and we should mention, is the fact that the Bible is written for us, but not to us.
That's probably my most quoted phrase. It's all over the place. People use it. And that's great because I think it captures something very important. The Bible is not written in our language. It's written in Hebrew. And any language implies a culture, includes a culture. And therefore, when we understand that it's written for us, that's great. It's God's word. It's for everybody. But it's not written to us. And therefore, we have to try to enter into the world of those to whom it was written. That's why we investigate Hebrew words. And it's also why we should investigate ancient literature, because then we can understand more about the world of the people to whom it was written. They're not going to come to us. We have to come to them. I use the metaphor of a cultural river. We all have a cultural river, and I describe in some of those books what our Western 21st century cultural river is. And there are many terms we could use. We can talk about social network, or we can talk about freedom and liberty and personal rights, capitalism. All of these things describe our cultural river. And the point I make is ancient Israelites know nothing of our cultural river. They wouldn't even understand those concepts. They wouldn't have those words. And therefore, they are not speaking to our cultural river. They are speaking in their own cultural river. And so we have to go and try to understand their cultural river.
Well, my thanks to you, John Walton, for joining us and helping us understand cultural rivers and understand the Bible better with your series of Lost World books published by University Press. And my thanks to the late Michael Heiser for bringing me back to you and also helping us understand the cultural context of the Bible. I'd like to remind our listeners, we have a website at radioscribe.com where we will link to this information and these books that we've been talking about. And we also have other resources, including breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority and information on our biblical archaeology news magazine, Artifacts. That's all at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through biblical archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.